one of the weirdest LSU shows I will ever do in my career. Tyrann Mathieu is done playing football. Arguably, the best LSU football player of all time. You can make a strong case. Obviously, he's up there with Burrow and Jamar and Jaden, and you could go all the way back to Tommy Casanova. But the one thing, this is the one thing that you cannot argue about Tyrann Mathieu when it comes to being the GOAT, is that his all-time LSU highlight reel is the single most unique piece of work we have ever seen in college football. When you think defensive back highlights, when you think of all-time great college football players, when it comes to the defensive back position, the first thing that everyone points to is Tyrann Mathieu. And I understand Champ Bailey is out there and Charles Woodson actually won the Heisman. Tyrann was a Heisman finalist. When everything is all about passing and pace and space, it was hard for Tyrann to pull off the plays that he made. And I think Tyrann's biggest legacy to go alongside Joe Burrow is that they were, on their respective teams, their best offensive, defensive, and special teams weapon. What I mean by that is Joe Burrow and that LSU offense was so good that it made life so much easier on an up and down, but mostly good LSU defense in 2019. And Tyrann Mathieu, the same thing holds true for that all-time great 2011 LSU Tigers team, where Tyrann was the best defensive player. He was also the best offensive player with his turnover-making ability, and he was the best special teamer with his punt returns. It was truly the most unique season in the history of LSU football. Now, I won't say it's the best, because best is so unbelievably subjective, but you know, the one thing you could say about Joe Burrow is there are other like all-time great quarterback seasons, right? There are so many other statistical outlier QB seasons, while none really to me comes close to Joe Burrow. At least you could point to quite a few QBs that put up gaudy numbers. What Tyrann Mathieu did is so rare. It is so rare. And I've heard, you know, Bammers bring up Minkah Fitzpatrick, who was obviously very good in his own right. Tennessee will bring up Eric Berry. I mean, there's plenty of different people you could point to. But the truth remains the same. Tyrann Mathieu is the most unique football player I have ever seen in at any level when he was at LSU. It literally is that mind-boggling great. I still have not seen anyone else strip the punt returner like he did versus Oregon and all in one swoop just walk into the end zone. And what's very interesting is we so much focus on the plays that Tyrann Mathieu made while he was at LSU, but we don't contextualize the situations he made those plays in, right? LSU versus Georgia, we had nothing going offensively. LSU versus Oregon, that was the first touchdown of the game. The big plays versus West Virginia were in the first half of that game. So not only were those plays great, they weren't like garbage time plays. Arkansas punt return. LSU started off losing that game by double digits. Tyrann Mathieu was the reason. So you'll never see another college football player like him. The quarterbacks at the collegiate level are so good. The rules so heavily favor the offenses now. And I just don't know if that type of instinctual athlete would even play defensive back. They all want to play wide receiver now anyway. So to me, he is the most unique college football player I have ever seen. And I do think at the very least, if you were listing the best LSU football players of this era, he has got to be in the top 10. Yeah, at the very least top 10 and probably top 5, especially if you're just factoring in single season success. Now, like we always say here on PHL, your legacy is always more than just 1 year, right? And for Tyron, it was obviously two very spectacular seasons at LSU. Obviously, as a true freshman, in the very first game, winning the game versus North Carolina, all the way to his very last versus Alabama, where, you know, he was a non-factor, and that wasn't, and, you know, there's nothing you could really do about that. Now, you had 2012, where, you know, we were anticipating the best defensive back season ever to happen again. And it didn't happen, obviously, for off-the-field stuff, which turned out, in the grand scheme of things, to be not too serious or nefarious when you look back on it. But, you know, there is that part of it. But Tyron redeemed himself. And I think that's part of the story that people really relate to off the field. Something else, obviously, Tyron Matthew has been an advocate for PETA. You know, for me, one of the big life-changing videos, because I wasn't really a pet guy until I met my wife. He, for PETA, did a commercial or infomercial, whatever you call it, PSA, where they put him in the back of a hot car to see how long he could last, just sitting back there in the back of a hot car with no water or anything. And as a world-class athlete, it didn't take him long. And that was more so to show everyone why you need to be careful not leaving pets or anything in the back of your car. So there's just so many good things he has done off the field. And one thing he did do is he did give LSU a lot of his money. A lot. All right. I mean, that's why they named quite a few things in that LSU building after him. So even though his final days as an LSU football player were what they were, there is no doubt that Tyron is more than made up for those shortcomings. And there's also one thing that he does, and we're going to get to all your comments, that really makes him different when it comes to the recruiting of Tyron Matthew, is that I remember when I took my first like full-time gig out of college, and I interviewed a high school defensive back who was just some two or three star in my local area. And that kid turned out to be a DB who went JUCO and started for Kansas under Les Miles. And I remember interviewing him, and he had no idea that I was an LSU guy. He had no idea I was a Tyron Matthew card collector and super fan. I said, "Hey, what made you want to be a defensive back?" And he said, "Every night before he goes to bed, he watches Tyron Matthew highlights." And that player's name was Elmo Hempstead. Had a pretty solid career at Kansas. So, you know, there are hundreds of young defensive backs who try to emulate what he does, and they listen to his words and all of it. So the thing that's interesting is Tyron made LSU so cool. The Badger. I mean, That was aura before the word aura became aura. Huh? It really was an out-of-body, holy religious experience. It really, 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 really was. Okay? So we're going to get to all of your questions, all of your comments today. We were going to do a Caden Durham deep dive. We will do that on tomorrow's show. We're also coming up here in just a few moments. We will have a guy who had an exclusive one-on-one with Caden Durham that made headwaves. And we've already done a deep dive on that, but he will join us. His name is Chris Gordy. You're going to love him. All right. So we say hi to Blanche. I know Tyron is arguably the best ever, but I have so many underdogs that bleed purple and gold that he likes more. So this goes along with our poll question. Where does Tyron Matthew rank on your all-time favorite LSU Tigers? 40% of you say number one, 35% of you top three, and rightfully 25% of you say top 10. Nobody has said 11 or lower just yet, okay? Tyler says, "I miss him already." Brennan, Christopher, You have to get a Tyron picture on the wall now, Carter. Well, the funny thing is I own way more Tyron photos compared to anyone else. So, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do with my Tyron collection. Obviously, I've had a few people reach out, and, you know, I'm a solo YouTuber. Some of them will never be sold. But if you are interested, you want to change my life, go right on ahead. Trying to move the fam. But yes, so I think a few of you want to know what's next. LA Mom says, as much as I like the Honey Badger, I don't want to lose Blake Baker. Okay. So there's a lot of and by the way, Tyron is definitely in my top three favorite LSU Tigers. It's so tough for me to do my favorites when you dedicate your whole life to LSU football. But yeah, Tyron's. I don't think I could say I have a favorite LSU football player. I think if you put a gun to my head, I think I would say Patrick Peterson. But I don't know. I don't know. Or I'm not supposed to say the G word, a pew pew to my head. Either way. So let's talk about Tyron Matthews' coaching aspirations. He wants to coach LSU. I think that is a dream of his to one day be a coach at LSU. I think a lot of former players have that, but I think Tyron really wants to do that, right? And that would be great. You know, we recently saw in an interim basis Cadillac Williams coach Auburn not too long ago. You know, obviously he's not going to be the head coach anytime soon with Brian Kelly, but could he come back to coach at LSU? The one thing I will say, LA Mom, is I don't think you have to worry about Tyron Matthew taking Blake Baker's job as a defensive coordinator. I don't think Tyron would necessarily want to call plays like right off the jump. I think he would want to be a position coach and then kind of work himself as a Deion type of coach, which is a blueprint. You know, we've seen quite a few coaches, Michael Vick, Eddie George has moved up the ranks pretty quickly now at Bowling Green, Deshaun Jackson, and so on and so on. I do think he would want to be more of a CEO type. And I think even though Tyron's football IQ is through the roof, you would want him to be that because that would be the biggest benefit of him being your coach is that every kid would want to come play for him. So you would want him more so doing the shaking hands, kissing babies, recruiting type of coaching. Now, obviously, plenty of coaches can do both. But, you know, I don't think you have to worry about Tyron Matthew being the defensive coordinator at LSU. I have been asked quite a bit about what is next for Tyron. One thing I will say, and we won't get into this today for a few reasons, because this is an LSU show, but a lot of you are Saints fans, and you're worried about the Saints now, and this decision to shockingly announce a retirement. It is important to point out Tyron just had another child not too long ago, and he probably wants to be a part of his son's athletic ascent. His son is a very talented baseball player. I don't know his exact age. I don't think he's close to high school age, but I've seen a few homers. A kid can flat out crush the baseball. So, you know, I will save my Saints thoughts because I have a Saints podcast with the Believe Network, and I just released an episode. I'll link it down below, Believe in Saints, if you want my view on the Saints and how they respond to Tyron Matthew. Okay. So, you know, I do think Tyron could step in right away and be the safeties coach. I do think that. Obviously, LSU has a young safeties coach, and they have had young DB coaches, and it's not gone mostly well, right? So you had Coach Deeples, and then now you have Jake Olson, who's done a good job overall recruiting safety, but we'll see. You know, one thing that is important to point out because I think a lot of you would want Tyron as a defensive backs coach over someone like Corey Raymond, as Skipper says that in the chat right now. Can we get rid of Corey Raymond and bring in the Honey Badger? Well, it is important to point out that Tyron probably has a relationship with Corey. But Corey never actually coached Tyron. If the timeline serves me correctly, I didn't think I'd be talking about Corey Raymond at this point. Corey started as a position coach in 2012. And obviously, Tyron didn't play that year. That was a year that he sat out. So, yes, I mean, obviously, my bias would seep in, but I think Tyron would be a very spectacular coach. Also, though, speaking to sources over the past couple of years regarding Tyron's post-career, family is a big deal to him. And if family is a big deal to you, and you have generational amounts of money, Tyron is very comfortably a nine-figure earner during his career. He will more than likely not coach anytime soon because it takes up so much of your time, in particular at the college level. Now, once again, if LSU asked him, he would Kyle Williams his way onto the staff. But, you know, I do think he wants to take some time off. Where I do think Tyron, what I think he'll do this next year is take a broadcasting job. And he won't be in a booth because that's obviously a pretty huge time commitment itself. I do think he'll be an analyst somewhere. You know, I could see the SEC Network, you know, making him their main guy as a studio analyst. Because, you know, there's a lot of iconic SEC football players that don't do anything now, but how many younger, freshly retired SEC players are out there that's more iconic than Tyron right now? Really, you can only think of maybe one being Cam Newton, and ESPN's already hired him. So I could see ESPN or SEC Network saying, look, Tyron, we want you. Give us 12 Saturdays out of the year. Fox has just made a splashy hire. We're going to put you right next to Tim Tebow, and we will every day say F Robert Griffin the III. But obviously, Tyron has a good relationship with RG3. So there you go. I do think Tyron. Once again, I don't know this for sure. I do think he'll be a broadcaster pretty soon. He's too affable, too interesting. And he's one of the few defensive players that have real facial recognition. So, there you go. Let's get to a few more here. Cole says, Honey Badger would make a good safety coach and recruiter. He's not ahead of Joe Cool, though, or JD5. Yeah, it just comes down to how you want to rank all-time great LSU football players. If you want to rank them based on their absolute best season, then I think the top three would be Jaden, Joe, and Tyron. But if you want to base it with a mixture of your career and your absolute peak, Tyron might be number one. Okay, now, for me, I do factor in, you know, games you miss, right? So Tyron, of course, missed a full season, and then he missed one in 2011 versus Auburn. And friend of the channel, Ron Brooks, stepped in admirably. It's a small factor, though. It's really not that big of a deal. But if you are one of those people that say your best ability is availability, then guess what? That it's got to be part of your evaluation some. Not a lot, but some, okay? What I would also say, though, and I do think this is important when discussing Tyron's legacy, is Like, I think because his 2011 was so unfreaking believably legendary, his and you so remember him as number 10 or number 14, excuse me, you remember him as number 7, but you forget him as number 14 in that first year. The truth is that number 14 season is probably still a top 10 LSU defensive back season ever. It really was that good. You know, the Texas A&M game was so insane. That Cotton Bowl versus Ryan Tannehill on a good A&M team. It was insane, like what he did. And Terrence Tolliver caught 3 TDs. Steven Ridley had a few good runs. But the story of that game was Tyrann Mathieu doing the shit that he did in that game. It was just crazy. Crazy. Mello says Tyrann has his own room at LSU. Blanche says Tyrann has his own room at my house. Tyrann will keep that in mind, Blanche. If he's ever in your area, he's like, well, I have a place to stay if I'm ever around Blanche. Let's go to Sam with the Super Chat. I really enjoyed our conversation this weekend. I think the Badgers should ride off into the sunset and not worry about LSU. He's loved on so many levels right now. If he comes in and coaches and the DBs do what they've been doing under BK, see how quickly people flip. Yeah, so there are instances when coach whoever goes back to coach at his alma mater and it does not go well, or coach coaches at a school and decides to run it back at that school where he had success and it does not go well. Obviously, most recently, it was Bo Pelini at LSU. So, should Tyrann just run off to the sunset? Would you want him back as the coach of LSU? Honestly, do. I mean, at some point, right, he's still in his mid-30s. So, you know, 20 years from now, sure, that'd be awesome. That would be the ultimate show your grandkids, hey, that was that guy. But would you, I don't know if I'd want him back coaching LSU right now, though, because I don't think he would fully want that. Take a year off, see, you know, how you enjoyed that year off. But once again, my prediction remains the same. He will be broadcasting somewhere. I think he would be offered too much money to not do it. Because think about it. I mean, there's, especially considering the LSU to broadcasting pipeline is so thick right now. So we'll see. We'll see. Andy says, card show in August in Shreveport. Am I coming? We shall see. We shall see. Andy, I don't have any plans for now, but you'll be the first to know, obviously. Let me go to a few more. Julie, thank you so much for your super chat. We really appreciate you. Let's see here. Now, let's go to Mello. Thank you for your super chat. He says, Tyrann as an LSU position coach would be a game changer. Yeah, I think as a safeties coach, he would be awesome right now. Okay. And then obviously recruiting wise, it could do wonders. So I do want to touch on one thing. I am... and this has hurt me in my career. I obviously do hot takes. Some that have backfired spectacularly. But what's very weird about me and my evolution as a broadcaster is that I am always open to changing my opinion. I'm always open to it. And I think it's fine and more fine to do so in sports than in other avenues, right? But I think we as very flawed individuals, I think we as flawed individuals should be open to changing our minds on certain subjects. So over the past couple of weeks, I have said, look, the SEC, you need to schedule that ninth conference game. And I still do believe that. I really, really, really do. But what Kurt Cignetti said today is such horse manure that I need to address it. He called out the SEC because they play a difficult non-conference schedule when that could not be further from the truth. Obviously, Texas plays Ohio State in week one. LSU plays Clemson in week one. Tennessee plays a rising Syracuse Orange in week one. Alabama schedules Florida State. So the SEC scheduled the two most difficult teams you possibly could schedule in the ACC. Then you also have Auburn scheduling Baylor in week one, one of the better programs in the Big 12 over the past 5 to 10 years. So if we're going to have debates about, and Cignetti's point was, well, we play nine conference games and still schedule a non-conference, and the SEC gets away with scheduling FCS teams and run-and-wins. The only SEC team that does not play a difficult Power Four at a conference game is Ole Miss. And that's because Wake Forest chicken shitted their way out of playing Ole Miss yet again. All right. So the truth here, and I do think it is very, very, very important when discussing the SEC or whatever, is that we don't get too much into blindness when it comes to the SEC versus the ACC or the Big Ten and just be so pro-SEC all the time. But I do find it fascinating that a coach who, yes, he did what he did at Indiana, and it's cool he did it in the final year of Corso for a full season on College Game Day, and Indiana just became the Hoosiers. It was fun, all that stuff. But you also got ridiculously lucky that you didn't have to play Oregon. You didn't have to play Penn State. You also got some teams on a down year like Washington and Michigan. Cignetti just talks way too much. I mean, he talks way, way, way too much. All right. But now, we got a quick break. Coming up next, the man who had the single most important interview with Caden Durham joins us after this.
Let's go!
On a journey together with Zion Imaging, I want you to see this experience up close. And me as a wedding and event DJ, I watched how everybody had so much fun with Zion Imaging. And a big reason for their success is the team. Yes, Jaron Thomas and his family started this off as a passion project, and they have one simple goal in mind: taking your event to the next level. Whether it's a wedding, reunion, quinceañera, school, or corporate event, Zion Imaging is all about family-friendly fun. And I gotta show you on this tour the high-level technology that quickly sends your video session to your phone, whether it's iPhone or Android. Yes, it's the Zion Imaging 360 Spin Booth experience serving North Texas, North Louisiana, South Arkansas, Orlando, and more. Give us a call, 318-469-4265. Check us out on Facebook or book us at Zion Imaging, xyanimaging.com. His name is Chris Gordy. You can follow him pretty simply at Chris Gordy. Does a little bit of everything, covers all different levels of sports. And we talked quite a bit about you when you did your Caden Durham interview. So you did that interview a few months ago. What really stood out to you about him?
The thing that jumped out at me first was he, you know, like just a mature kid for being a kid that was thrown in as a true freshman at LSU last year. And, you know, I went back to that week one game against USC. Remember, it was John Emery and it was, you know, Josh Williams. And I'm like, he wasn't supposed to be the guy, you know, even really contributing very much last year. And then once he got his chance, I think it was the South Carolina game that he really kind of, oh, okay, there's something here. Kind of established himself as the primary back, and as the season went along, I mean, he was just so productive. And you know, look, he told me the phone, the background on his cell phone is a picture of the Doak Walker Award, and says his goal is he wants to win that before his college career is over. So you know, look, we got to admit LSU did not run the ball great last year. A lot of that was the offensive line opening up running lanes was not there consistently, but I think year two of Caden Durham kind of getting a chance to show what he could do, and he's a monster catching the ball out of the backfield as well. With some other wrinkles, how does Harlan Berry play in, you know, as another guy in this offense? I think LSU could find ways to get this offense, this run game opened up a little bit more this year.
The biggest SEC storyline is what?
Just overall, the whole conference?
Yeah, anything. I mean, you do Locked On SEC. You are the guy that I think is the best equipped to answer this question.
So I've posed it this way. We talked with Kirby Smart last week at SEC Media Days. I think Kirby has earned the benefit of the doubt where Georgia doesn't rebuild, they reload, right? Like top five recruiting classes. I mean, basically, he's been number one or number two in recruiting every year. Georgia loses a ton, but again, they get the benefit of the doubt because Kirby's earned that. And he went back-to-back national championships. To me, the question is, has Steve Sarkisian earned that, right? Like, they're going into year two at Texas. They lose a ton to graduation and the draft, and yet everybody's just going, oh, Texas, they're just going to do it again. I had somebody who covers the Big 12 tell me, wait a minute, Texas didn't even – they didn't dominate the Big 12 when they were here. It's not like they were in the Big 12 title game every year, yet they're going to go to the SEC and just go, oh, yeah, they're just going to get there every year, the SEC championship game. I'm like, it's a great point. And, look, did the SEC do them favors getting a break of a schedule? Absolutely. And then, again, you know, from 24 to 25, we just flip the schedule. Home and away just flip. So you're playing the same opponents. But I do think the schedule gets tougher for them. And I give them credit. Going on the road and opening at Ohio State is as tough as anything. So you give them credit for that. But I think, you know, last year playing Florida at home when DJ Lagway was getting like his first taste of football, I think this plays very differently having to go on the road to the swamp this year.
Right, and, right. You know, and they played the backup too.
Yeah.
In that game. And yeah, I test Texas looked amazing last year, but man, their schedule ended up being the weakest on my own power ratings because of that injury and a few other breaks. They didn't have to play Nuss. They didn't have to play Sellers and those guys. But, you know, for me, I look at LSU's schedule. And, Gordy, I've gone back and forth. You know, there's so much on this opening Clemson game. But outside of that, do you think the schedule is manageable for an LSU team rebuilding its offensive line?
Yeah, I wish they opened with, like, Georgia opens with Marshall. And the only reason they get Marshall is because they were supposed to have Oklahoma, but Greg Sankey, when it was announced Oklahoma's coming to the SEC, he said, why don't y'all nix that home-and-home series or whatever they were doing? And so they ended up with Marshall. I wish LSU was opening with Marshall. I wish they had, you know, Marshall and then Louisiana Tech and then Florida at home. Like, I think we'd all be saying LSU was a lock to be a playoff team. It's that stupid Clemson game that's getting in the way because – go look at LSU the last couple of years. I mean, 2 years ago, I had to go back and look because I forgot. The Jaden Daniels Heisman year, LSU lost three games that year. If they had won the opener against Florida State, they would have been in the playoff conversation. You know, yeah. So it's you know, the same thing this year. If you take that Clemson game off the schedule, I think you're looking at it going, lose to Bama, lose at Bama, and then lose either of at Ole Miss or Oklahoma, and you're in. But if you lose that game at Clemson, the opener, you have no wiggle room. Like, you're going to have to play phenomenal football the rest of the way. So it's a blessing and a curse, man. It's a great test. But you know, I was bringing this, I was on Paul Feinbaum earlier and I brought this up, like the conference committee does not, or the, this group of dopes that gets in a hotel in Dallas and start and decides who the best teams are. Like they don't take non-conference schedule into the account at all. Like 2 years ago, Michigan played ECU, UNLV and Bowling Green in their non-conference. They didn't care. They just said, Michigan, you're in. Last year, Ohio State and their non-conference played Akron, Western Michigan, and Marshall. And they said they're in. I don't think this committee is going to look and go, well, look, LSU, they went and tested themselves at Clemson. They lost on a last-second field goal, so we got to give them credit. No, they're going to go, you got a third loss. You're out. I mean, that's what sucks about this. And we do it the opposite in basketball, Carter. Like, the basketball committee goes, you know what? Auburn lost that game at Duke back in November or December. That was a good loss. We're going to give them credit for that. They don't do this. This committee doesn't do it in football. They only look at wins and that's it. They don't care what high school you beat. You beat Hoover High, you're in. So again, LSU, it all comes down to that Clemson game. Find a way to win that one.
So this was earlier. This was earlier in the day.
Yeah.
And you decided to go a little bit more casual for my spot. I like that. I like that. I'm gonna go ahead and play this. Let's see what Gordy had to say on the Paul Feinbaum show a little bit earlier.
We haven't almost been there. Like he says, Texas clobbered Ohio or Ohio State clobbered Texas. I was at that game on the Cotton Bowl on the field. Texas was down 7 with 3 minutes to go, trying to punch it in. Now they fumbled it and went the other way, but they were right there. He says, you know, Alabama couldn't move the ball on Michigan. They still went to overtime, right? Had almost 300 yards of offense. So we're trying to rewrite history here as if the SEC is just non-existent in the last few years in the college football playoff. And look, we talked to Greg Sankey last week. He thinks this is the year the SEC will get back in there. Somebody from this group is going to play for and hopefully win a title. But all these people buying into Penn State, Paul, like the next time James Franklin wins a big game, it'll be the first time. Yeah. I mean, he beat SMU and Boise in the playoff last year, but frankly, I think Vanderbilt could have done that. You know, he's 0-8 in his last 8 games against Ohio State. He lost a bowl games in recent years to Ole Miss and Arkansas. So forgive me if I'm not buying into Penn State and their hype.
I don't even want to talk. You're on such a roll, Chris. Chris Gordy joining us. Chris, let's talk a little bit about.
Bro, you were cooking. You should have done what the kids do.
The Penn State crap is killing me, Carter. Like, I mean, I'm sorry. They Drew Aller. That's who we're gonna go. We're undefeated Penn State. Go on to a title. Like, they're 0-8 in their last 8 games against Ohio State. How about buying this as a national championship team? So look, I'm SEC biased, I'll admit it, but Penn State, you want to sell me Ohio State, it's gonna win it all. Sure. Penn State, who consistently loses, they lost to Ole Miss in a bowl game 2 years ago. Like, what are we doing?
But you didn't hear Trevor Peña is going to win the Biletnikoff. You didn't. I guess you didn't hear that.
I missed that one.
Oh my god! I would be honest. I've been so caught up like doing Tyron stuff, and I've been doing a lot of Georgia film studies on my SEC channel. I did not see you're on Feinbaum, so I feel weird because I texted you. I was like, because tonight was supposed to be a Caden Durham thing. And I was like, well, I know the guy that's actually interviewed Caden and talked to him. And if I would have known that you were on Feinbaum earlier, I wouldn't have bothered you at all. I would have been like, dang, dude, you're on the Stern of the SEC.
What's funny is, Carter, you're one of my 6 hits today. I've had, it was like back to back to back to back.
Oh, really? So, okay, so what were the other ones?
My guy, Buddy Sanji in Baton Rouge, went on with him.
Yeah, Buddy.
I did Philip Jordan in Alabama. Okay. And then I've got our SEC squad show coming up next. What else did I do? I don't know. I can't keep up. But you're right up there, man. You were right behind Feinbaum.
Good. I love it. Few more for a very busy man, Mr. Chris Gordy. You also cover like professional sports and all of it. How do you feel about where we are right now with the revenue sharing and the $20.5 million number? I thought it was fascinating what Kentucky had to say about, you know, spending more on basketball. I love that, you know, these teams, but these universities have got to make cap conscious decision. It's still so crazy that I'm even like saying that, but you've covered like actual like teams that have salary caps and all of it. So from a business perspective, how have you viewed the last couple of months and the evolution of all of that?
Yeah, it's wild. I saw Jim Nagy last week at SEC Media Days, and okay. he, the guy who ran the Senior Bowl for so long, is now the GM at Oklahoma, and he's managing the cap and doing all this stuff, and it is wild. I'll say it from this point. When you and I were in school, Carter, college football became a $1 million business, and it was a huge deal. But somewhere along the way, the last 20 years, it's become a $1 billion business, and it got to a breaking point where you're like, room and board and education ain't getting it done anymore. Like, these kids they're the stars on the field. They should be getting some chunk of change. Again, we can't go backwards. If this thing went back and it's just a $1 million business, okay, we could talk about that. But like, right, when it became billions and all the fat cats up top are pocketing all the money, it's like, all right, they should get something. So I'm all for that. NIL, in the spirit of NIL, I think should have been approved a long time ago. I'll never forget when we were in school, there was a quarterback at Oklahoma that was playing in a golf tournament. And it was like, if you hit a hole in one, you win a car. He hit a hole in one. He won the car. And then the NCAA stepped in and went, no, that's an improper benefit. It's like, in what world? Like, why? It's the most idiotic thing. Tyrann Mathieu, who you've been talking about, who retired, like, he tried to make Honey Badger shirts and they were like, you can't put your number on it. You can't put 7. It's like, why? Like, it's just so idiotic. And so I'm glad we've gotten over that hump. The biggest one is your own autograph. Like, that was the one where Johnny Manziel couldn't sell his own autograph. Like, it's his name. Let him do whatever the hell he wants. But it was like, oh, we gave you this platform for you to be famous or whatever. But so I'm glad we got all over that. But to answer your question, I think we put too much stock into the revenue share. It is still just $20 million. And that's spread out across every sport on campus. I started doing the math. I'm like, this isn't a lot. Like, the bulk of what these kids are going to be getting is still NIL deals. Like, that still is the gist of it. But I think the big split happened was the Manziels, the Tebows, the Tyrann Mathieus signing NIL deals as established stars versus the 17-year-old recruits who haven't done crap yet getting NIL deals. That's where I have the biggest problem, because it's a gamble, which, again, I think you should be allowed to do. If the Oracle guy wants to pay Bryce Underwood, $7-8 million to go to Michigan, that's his bad investment. Let him do it. You know what I mean? It's like in any other field of work, Carter, if somebody came along and said, Carter, I want to buy your YouTube channel for $20 million, it would be like somebody stepping in, YouTube stepping in and going, no, you can't sell for that much. Like, who are you to say that? Like, so people always say it's like what the market dictates. That's the market. If somebody's willing to pay you that, that's the market. So, I do think it is going to be very interesting to see how this, this oversight committee or whatever the hell they call themselves, it's the check with me. Hey, you can do it, I'll do it, but you got to check with me first and make sure I approve it. That's going to be fascinating to see how that happens, because again, I think the revenue sharing from the school is only going to go so far. And kudos to Kentucky. I mean, that's a great decision on their part to go, you know what, we're going to put a little bit more into the kitty for basketball, because it means way more for us, to put it this way, for Kentucky to win a national championship in basketball than it does for the football team to just make the playoff. Like, if they were 10-2 and made the playoff, they know they're not going to win it all. But basketball, they can. So, yeah, put your resources there. But if somebody came to me tomorrow and said, we want you to come be the GM for our school, I would turn it down immediately. I don't want anything to do with that, because their heads must be spinning right now and how this is all divided. It's funny. The big discussion on Media Days was, are we going to go to 9 conference games? And the money sitting there on the table, ESPN and Disney are like, we'll pay you for that 9th conference game. Cause they want another week of SEC games. Yeah, and I started thinking about it. I'm like, some of the coaches don't want that, but who does want it? The other coaches of like basketball and baseball, like, who is it? My guy, Bruce Pearl at Auburn, is probably like, hell yeah, do it. Yeah, we need more money in the kitty for basketball. You know what I mean? So it's like every other sport on campus is probably like, yeah, football, go play 9. We want that extra revenue. Cause it's all coming out of the same pot. So, again, it's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out. But yeah, I think when you really take a step back and think about it though, Carter, $20 million that the school can pay players, you spread that out across every sport, man. It is not, that is not a lot of money trickling down. The NIL deal is still going to be the bulk of where kids are getting their money to come play football.
I know you have another show to get ready for, but I wanted to, I still have this, the Ron Jaworski.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
So Gordy granted me access to, and I still appreciate you for doing that. You did not have to do that. Mike Ditka, Ron Jaworski cigar party. And dude, there's just so many. Craig Steltz was there, which is cool. And for LSU fans, I might be the coolest person there. But freaking, we took a photo of Brian Urlacher. Yes. And then who else? Kellen Winslow Sr., Bernie Kosar. I mean, just so many. Like, I really appreciate you for doing that. I want to give you some public love on that.
No, man, it was fun. It was a fun weekend, and nobody better to have. Like, look, there's other people that I could have been with. I doubt anybody else would have enjoyed it as much as Carter the Power Bryant.
So. It was good, man. And last thing, I'll let you say whatever you want about Tyrann Mathieu retiring. But anything off the top of your dome, man?
Yeah, I brought this up earlier today. It is a damn shame how the way 2011 ended, and that ridiculous night in January of 2012 at the Superdome that we all want erased from our memories. But that night should not erase the ridiculous, awesome ride that the 2011 season was. And Tyrann Mathieu was a big reason and a big part of that season. It will go down as one of the most historic, ridiculous regular seasons that LSU has ever had. And again, 19 and Burrow kind of made us forget even more about it. But like, do not forget. Go back and watch those highlights. But they had no passing game, Carter. It was all running game and dominant defense and Tyrann Mathieu on doing everything. I mean, so that to me stands out. Like, if you're an LSU fan, you have to respect that 2011 season. Forget the championship at Bama. I get it. It sucked. It was the worst night ever. But the journey in that season, even beating Georgia in the SEC championship game, like, that was that whole ride. Should not be erased from our memories. It should be remembered. And Tyrann Mathieu getting a Heisman invite. I mean, getting invited to New York because of the ridiculousness that he was. I'll never forget, what was it, the Kentucky game where he had the sack and basically took the football away from the guy, like took it back to the house and scored. And it was like absolutely unreal. So yeah, what a heck of a career. And I got a feeling his time in Baton Rouge is not done, Carter. It feels like he's going to come back. And yeah.
Chris Gordy, follow him on social media. Locked On SEC is where you can find him on all podcast platforms. We appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man. Anytime.
Chris Gordy. Wait, hold on. Ozzy Osbourne song? What is your favorite Ozzy Osbourne song?
Crazy Train. Come on. That's a great one.
Yeah, I think I'd go with that. You know, it's
you got to include Black Sabbath songs too, like My Mom Coming Home. Good one.
Yeah, but I'm gonna go a Crazy Train as well. All right, Gordy, we'll talk soon, man.
All right, man. See ya.
Chris Gordy. I owe him a lot, man. Part of my career, I missed working with Gordy a whole lot in like student social media because I think I'm like 4 or 5 years younger than him, maybe a year or two in either direction. But he was the one that really got LSU student media going, and that's what helped launch me into where I am now, which is a broke YouTuber. No, for real, I owe Chris Gordy a lot, but there you go. Now, here's what you're going to do. Next 5 to 10 minutes, we're going to answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep it moving. Yeah, sad story, obviously. Ozzy dying, the guy drowning from the Cosby Show. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. I've shared this before in one of our many late stream rants. I freaking fear drowning almost every day of my life. It is the one way I do not want to go out. I mean, take me out any way imaginable. I would rather fall into an erupting volcano full of electric eels Give me that over drowning. Send me to Mars, where my body would slowly decompose and freeze. Oh, we got a hot take. Moff, you dog. I don't think Tyrann Mathieu would be a good coach, says Moff, you dog. Kind of a bold take for your first ever comment on the channel. Okay, so let me take off my super biased Tyrann Mathieu glasses. One thing that is a little interesting is when you look at the best coaches that have ever existed in most sports, rarely are the best coaches star players. And obviously, Tyrann Mathieu was a star player in college and a star player in the NFL. A lot of the best coaches were really good role players or just like good, like kind of college athletes. Right. And you honestly see that in a lot of different sports, right? The best baseball coaches is Dave Roberts right now. And he was a role player, if you will. Basketball, Steve Kerr is who many would say is the best coach. He was a role player, right? Very good role player, but he was a role player. So I've always found that to be interesting. There's obviously star players who turn out to be good coaches, Lenny Wilkins being one of them. But and that's more so basketball. Football, there's just not many star players that even get into coaching to begin with because, well, they make so much money and they have so many other opportunities to do easier things than coach with their money, whether it like with Magic Johnson and Tom Brady joining ownership groups or once again, Tom Brady and whoever as a broadcaster, if you will. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to predict who would be a good coach or not good coach. There's so many different things that go into those circumstances. But I tend to think Tyrann Mathieu would be a really good coach because what makes him a little bit different than other kind of legendary athletes that try coaching is like Deion Sanders really wanted to coach. Tyrann Mathieu has said and he really wants to coach. So I do think your desire really does matter because if you are a legendary player, more often than not, you have so much money that you don't need to coach. AP, what's good? Yeah, and we talked about that some on Sunday. So I was in Oxford when that news broke. I was actually at the football stadium when that news broke. So, yeah, very sad story. Young man from Edna Carr in New Orleans. I don't know any details. None at all. But my thoughts and prayers go out to him. You know, one thing that fascinated me was there is another Georgia player arrested for reckless driving. Another. And it wasn't a Georgia player, it was a Georgia commit. I don't even remember his name. And I don't quite get it. Like, I don't. Like, are there other teams that have players that get arrested for speeding and all of it? Yeah, but not quite like Georgia players do. It is the weirdest thing. It is one of the weirdest, weirdest, weirdest things. And they called it, I didn't really read too much into it, but some of the news organizations characterized it as a violent driving charge. I don't think I've ever even heard of that, a violent driving charge. Very, very, very bizarre. Now, one thing I will say is on Power Hour SEC, I've been doing, like I shared with Gordy, a lot and I mean a lot of Georgia Bulldogs breakdowns. Now, Georgia's not been one of my big teams on there, but looking back on it, they kind of sort of have been, and I'm going to be doing more Georgia coverage. I kind of just, like Gordy does being an SEC YouTuber, you kind of have to follow who's giving you the most love, right? Arkansas gives me a lot of love, so I'm going to produce a lot of Arkansas content. Tennessee has shown me the most love alongside Arkansas, so I'm going to be doing a lot more Georgia stuff. It is interesting, though, how some programs replace certain things easier than others, right? One area where Georgia just can't quite figure out what's wrong is their wide receiver room. So they go get Zachariah Branch. I sit and I watch Zachariah Branch for as long as I possibly could over the weekend, okay? So when I got back from Oxford, I was like, let's do a Zachariah Branch film study because I just did a Gunnar Stockton one and it did well. And the Branch one is kind of blowing up. I never would have thought Zachariah Branch would generate clicks. Whatever. Five-star recruit. And I walked away unimpressed. I'm serious. Like I remember him having good games versus LSU. But a lot of his success versus LSU were like on little screen targets, and he got tackled by a kicker. Now, Aaron Burrell is really athletic, but still, he got tackled by a kicker. You would think the best kickoff returner would not get tackled by a kicker. And it wasn't like a sideline run out of bounds. He was tackled in the open field. And I was like, man, I don't know how much I really like this guy. And the Georgia wide receivers, that was one of the biggest talking points in the SEC last year. They dropped like crazy. They couldn't get open. They looked confused quite a bit. And now going into this year, I feel a little bit better about them with Noah Thomas coming in from Texas A&M. As many of you know, I've always been a believer that Noah Thomas is a very, very, very good SEC wide receiver. It hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm like, well, the Georgia wide receiver room hasn't been quite as good since Cortez Hankton left. I really let that sit in. And it's interesting. I'm not saying that they didn't have good receivers before Cortez got there, but Cortez's first year with LSU was 2022, okay? He comes over with Brian Kelly, and he's been there since. And then, obviously, that Georgia wide receiver room in 2022 was really good, right, with Ladd McConkey leading the way there. But then it just progressively kept getting worse, right? So they had Ladd and Bowers. He's a tight end. And then once they left, obviously, last year was a mess. And I feel like this year it could be a mess where LSU lost Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. And they were fine at wide receiver last year with Kyron Lacy and Aaron Anderson. So I'll be honest, you know, there's some coaches I've spoken to. I have never spoken with Cortez Hankton, ever. I've spoken to some people around him. I understand that there has been some Cortez Hankton criticism regarding the development of the high school receivers. And one crop in particular that he gets criticized for was Shelton Sampson and Jaylen Brown. So the thing that's not included in that criticism is that the 2023 wide receiver grouping that year, Zachariah Branch was the top five star that year, has been bust city. It has arguably been the, and once again, we're going into year three, so we'll see. Of the top 24 wide receivers in that class, four of them have been good. Four. None of them have been spectacular. Four have been good, though. Carnell Tate's one of them. I included Branch in there. Moore at Texas has been good. Not great, but good. He's a good college football wide receiver. And the funny thing about it is when you look throughout college football, one of the more accurate position groups that 247 and On3 has gotten good at evaluating is wide receiver. I remember in Michael Thomas's recruiting class, holy shnike, there were so many three-star NFL superstars. Allen Robinson was in that class. Michael Thomas was in that class. There were so many. But now there's just not as many of those. It was just a bad year. So it wasn't just Jaylen Brown and Shelton Sampson that didn't work out. It's important to look at all the wide receivers. Maybe it was just a bad crop. So you look at the 2024 crop. We did not land an elite wide receiver in that crop. It wasn't for a lack of trying, but we tried, and it didn't work out. So, look, it's one of those things where after watching a lot of these Georgia wide receivers, I became a bigger fan of Cortez Hankton, who I've not really, like, talked a whole hell of a lot about on here because he's mostly done a good job. And he should be doing a good job because he's from here and he gets paid close to $1 million every year to be a position coach. But yeah, we'll take a few more. Let's go to Will. Do I think rankings should take into account margin of victory since teams like Penn State can scrape by for the season and get an easy spot into the playoffs? Absolutely, Will. But here's the thing about this is we are very inconsistent with margin of victory. All right, so let's use to me the poster child example of margin of victory. And that was last year in our own conference. So I think there was something that happened to the SEC last year when it comes to the college football playoff that was a huge blessing in disguise. And that was SMU and Clemson getting into the playoff, right? So it came down to SMU and Alabama for the final playoff slot. If Alabama had gotten in over Ole Miss, it would have been really bad for the SEC. Now, why do I say that? Well, Alabama was not a good team at the end of the year, as many of you can attest. Why weren't they a good team at the end of the year? Because they were never really that good of a team, period. Now, I'm not saying that because they beat the hell out of us. I will tell you the same thing. We were not a college football playoff team. Right? Bama was a good team. Their yard per play numbers were really good. SP plus numbers were actually really good. But Alabama did something I feel you can't do when you are getting ready to go to the college football playoff. They got their asses blown out. They got blown out. Back blown out like Bonnie Blue blown out. Right? They had no business being even close to the college football playoff because they got blown out by the worst quarterback in the SEC. And yeah, there were some bad calls mixed in there, but yeah, they shouldn't have been in. They should not have been in. Okay. So what does that mean? What does that mean exactly? Well, take a look at Ole Miss. Ole Miss beat everybody they played by double digits. All right. The Mississippi State performance really wasn't all that great. And then the Oklahoma win really wasn't all that great either. But they still beat those teams comfortably. And all the games that they lost were close games. Now, they were to a bad Kentucky team, a good LSU team, and a good Florida team at the end of the year. So if you look at yard per play margin and all those different things, there was no reason for Alabama to get into the college football playoff over Ole Miss. And there was sure as hell no reason for South Carolina to get into the college football playoff over Alabama, who they lost to, and over Ole Miss, who blew them out on their home field. So here's the thing. If you are going to do the margin of victory argument, if you're going to do that, make sure you get it correct. Because I really do think Ole Miss should have gotten into the playoff over SMU. That's how strongly I felt about Ole Miss. Because if you want to factor in the thing called the eye test, then the eye test overwhelmingly supported Ole Miss getting into the college football playoff. Margin of victory overwhelmingly should have had Ole Miss into the college football playoff. Do you know how hard it is in all of your wins to beat every single one of your teams by double digits? Ole Miss did that. It's hard as hell. It is hard as hell. So what would that tell me? Well, if I didn't know anything about Ole Miss, and let's just say you call up some bloke over in England and you say, look, in all the games that they lost, they were close losses. In all the games that they won comfortably. What would someone across the pond or whoever, what would they tell you? They'll tell you that they were unlucky. Now, did Ole Miss have a schedule advantage over some of the other teams in the SEC last year? Yeah, absolutely. But if you're going to do margin of victory, well, you got to get it right. Let's go to LA Mom with the very generous super chat earlier. I really appreciate you. Why do the CFP Lords not use an algorithm similar to the CWS in seeding for the playoffs? So here's the thing, LA Mom, they do. There is a formula that they use. Now, how do I know this? Well, think about it this way. The people that are on the college football playoff committees are from all different walks of life. They are busy as hell. There's no way that they actually have the time to sit and watch all the game copies of all these different games. No, they're ADs at their own school. It's hard to do all of that. So what do they do? Well, they tell you that they have a few metrics that they factor in. Strength of schedule, all of that stuff. Strength of schedule is actually not as big of a metric. It actually, margin of victory is more so a word called game control is something that they use. And there's a bug on me. I just took a shower before this live stream too. I don't smell. But game control is something else that they use. So there is a formula that they use. Now, do they tinker it? And is there some subjectiveness involved in it? Yeah, because they overruled their formula, or the one that I believe that they used would have had Florida State in over Alabama. But that was a four-teamer, and you know, we're past that debate. So there you go. Now, that'll do it for me. I'll make sure we didn't get any more Venmos or anything like that. We did not. Here, big shout out to Zion Imaging. Big shout out to Fast Draft Fantasy. They're on your bottom scroll. Please go sign up today. Use my promo code Carter for a deposit match bonus up to $50 with Fast Draft Fantasy. Big thanks to Chris Gordon. We'll talk to you tomorrow. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. Tomorrow night at 6. Don't forget, we have our Michael Van Buren film study. It is up. And tonight we're doing fried chicken tonight. Let's go. Shout out to our top super chatter, Sam coming in hot. Appreciate you, Mello and Blanche. RIP Ozzy Osbourne. And salute to you. the GOAT, Tyrann Mathieu.